Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Professor Roseanne Kenny is not afraid to speak about ageing. She thinks we all need to talk about it a lot more and not always focus on the negative. She's also the head of medical gerontology at Trinity College Dublin, where she founded TILDA, the Irish Longitudinal Study on Ageing. And she has brought a lot of that research and knowledge to her new book. It's called Age Proof, The New Science of Living a Longer and Healthier Life. And it's published by Legom. Roseanne, you're very welcome to the studio. It's lovely to have you here. Now, you say that a lot of people don't want to think about or talk about getting older, but it's going to happen to all of us. In your experience, when are people ready to talk about ageing?
I mean, one has to say that the earlier you start to think about it in a positive way, the better. Mm-hmm. And research would show that the ageing changes in cells start as early as our 20s, probably earlier, but they're apparent in our 20s.
Yeah, and now, for most of us, we're going to live long, hopefully healthy lives, and it's about optimising that so that when you are 75, 80, 85, you still have a fulfilled life.
That's right, and I firmly believe that the over 50s now are a completely new cohort. Our world has never before experienced the high numbers of people in that older, well, 50 and above age group. Mm-hmm. I'm well there myself. But that demographic is going to get bigger and bigger and be more vocal, more educated, have more disposable income, etc. So it's almost like there's a new cohort that we as clinicians need to change our practice to accommodate, that individuals need to be aware of their own health status and therefore apply new behaviours to have an independent and really good, healthy, older period of time in the latter years, and that society needs to reflect on. This is different. This is new.
So is this about people in their 30s, 40s and 50s changing their lifestyle so that they can look forward to a later life? Or is it ever too late to start?
So it's never too late to start, but the earlier you start, without a doubt, the better.
Elderly, the word elderly. And, you know, we use it in the media and sometimes I cringe at it because as you grow a little bit older yourself, you realise, well, I know people in their 70s now who I wouldn't describe as elderly because the word has connotations. What are the words we should be using for people who are advancing in years?
So there's been work around this and the preferred option is older. And elderly was actually one of the least preferred terms. But I mention in the book, I had an 84-year-old patient who came in with a chest infection, but was very insistent that she be discharged as soon as possible because she was responsible for care of her elderly neighbour. And it transpired that her neighbour was 14 years her junior, but she referred to her neighbour as elderly, although in no way did she consider herself to be that when I discussed it with her. So I think that older is fine. Elderly has negative connotations. And when you ask people who become older how they would like to be referred to, it's as older.
And you see this in real time, okay? You see somebody who is 84, like the woman that you mentioned there, who's full of vigour, full of life. But you might have another 84-year-old whose life experience at that point is completely different.
And what's interesting about that, Claire, is we have control of 80% of our ageing. Yeah.
Right.
Our genes are only responsible for 20%. So everything through our lifespan that we've covered in the book, even enjoyable things like friendship, laughter, purpose, creativity, as well as, of course, diet and the different exercise programs, etc. All of those factors influence how we age. We can control that. And the earlier one starts to control behaviours, the better the last lap will be.
So let me talk to you now about what we can be doing. You mentioned diet there and exercise. So let's talk about the diet first. And I know you practice what you preach now. I know this from the book that you do, you know, some of the restricted eating, for example.
Yeah.
But talk to me about when you eat and what we should be eating.
So I think that there's a whole lot out there about diet and it's incredibly confusing. But no matter how much work we look at, time and time again, it comes back to the constituents of the Mediterranean diet. And I think for individuals, that's the easiest thing to remember, the Mediterranean diet. And that's very simply loads of fruit, vegetables, nuts, and of course, fish. with chicken and much less red meat. And the other sort of dietary rule that's easy to apply to, that again appears to be the case for long-lived communities who live healthily, etc., is low sugar, low salt, and no processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
So the processed foods in particular are really bad for our microbiome, and more we're discovering the important role of the microbiome in healthy aging. So they're the kind of, that's what I would say is a helicopter view of a good diet.
Yeah, and it's simple enough really,
really
when you
simple.
Put it like that.
Yeah, it is.
Alcohol. Talk to me about alcohol and aging.
Well, I mean, alcohol in moderation, okay? Nobody can fault alcohol in moderation. And some of the, for example, I've spoken about the blue zones, the long-lived zones. And in order to de-stress, downtime, the Sardinians do employ alcohol. So every afternoon, Sardinians will meet their friends and share and engage, etc., with lots of laughter and 2 to 3 glasses of red wine. So, you know, there's quite a good science now behind red
They're
wine.
They're probably not big carafes of wine like we sometimes see. You know how see a glass of red wine in that part of the world?
Yeah.
It's tiny.
Yes.
Comparison to what we do.
Yes,
big,
it is.
Huge things.
It is. But it lasts them the 2 hours that they're engaging. And the social engagement part of that is really important. So with respect to alcohol, I would say to listeners, don't drink alone ever. If you're going to have a drink, have it with friends. And then you're getting the benefit of both of those behaviours, which we know are very good at a cellular level.
Yes, and being in a community and having friendships, that's hugely important as well.
Isn't that amazing? And when this was first discovered, you know, geneticists, etc., said that can't possibly be the case. But we now know this to be the case. Lots of systematic reviews have shown actually that quality friendships regularly, being regularly exposed to quality friendships, is as good for your health as not smoking, not drinking excessively, or not taking lots of physical activity. That's how potent it is. So the other thing to say that is your relationship, in the context of relationships, sometimes family relationships are very good, but sometimes not so, because we're wedded to our family, as it were. And that relationship can sometimes be stressful. You're almost obliged to see someone or whatever in the family who you may not have a great relationship, etc., with. So good friendships, we have choice. We usually share things in common. In fact, our friends actually share, on average, the same genetic constructs as fourth cousins. So that's how close we are to friends.
Interesting.
Isn't that remarkable?
And so for people in their 30s, 40s and 50s who have very busy lives, raising families, working, on, it's really important to carve out the time for friends.
Absolutely. And you feel better. If you've had a good night with friends, you feel better the next day. And there's a good biological reason for that. We know that friendships and laughter reduce stress hormones. They enhance sleep and also have an effect on inflammation. So there are a lot of good biological reasons why this is the case.
Yeah, you talk about laughter as well. Our children laugh so much more than we do, many, many times more than an adult does.
Yeah. A child laughs 400 times a day. I mean, I wish we were laughing 400 times a day. Actually, when I was writing the chapter on laughter, we were, you know, deep into COVID at the time. And I just reflected that it was 6 o'clock in the evening and I didn't remember having had a good laugh that day. So it is important to laugh.
Yeah.
And laughter, again, has very, very good anti-stressing effects.
Well, now that you mentioned that, I wonder, will we see in time that COVID has aged us?
Mm.
What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely think that's the case. Now, particularly for people who haven't had a good experience with COVID, who have felt socially isolated and lonely. And we do know from the Tilda study that loneliness was threefold higher before, since after COVID than before the study, because we have pre and post data collected. So, and also depression was threefold higher. So things like loneliness and depression hugely impact on the aging process and accelerate the pace.
Okay, I want to talk to you about the animal world as well, because we can learn a lot, can't we, from what happens there and human longevity. We're closer to worms, are we, than we might think?
Yes, absolutely. And an awful lot of the work that we do are actually on worms and the housefly, Drosophila. I mean, we share a huge a number of genes with those species, which we can study in terms of aging, and also with other mammals, you know, monkeys, etc., rhesus monkeys in particular. Some of the early caloric restriction work was done on rhesus monkeys, and it's very credible to actually take the scientific learnings from animals and apply them to humans.
Mm-hmm. So you just touched again on the restricted eating, caloric restrictions.
Yeah.
Are you talking about reducing the amount you eat or reducing the time window that you eat in?
Individuals need to actually identify which of those processes works best for them. One that I think is not too difficult, and there's huge science behind it, reducing diabetes, obesity and heart disease, is the 16-hour fast. Now, you might think, oh, I can't fast for 16 hours.
You're asleep for most, for half of it anyway.
That's the point.
Yeah.
As long as you can curtail your eating to within an 8-hour window during the day, then the rest of the day is a 16-hour fast, and you can make that your nocturnal period, so that it doesn't hugely impact.
And there are definite benefits when it comes to aging in following that practice.
100%. In terms of the disease statuses that I cited, but lovely study in mice showing that mice given two groups of mice, one given a certain amount of food over a 24-hour period, and another group given the same amount of food but in an 8-hour period, the first became obese and the second did not.
Mm-hmm.
So same amount of food, but curtailing the period of food intake.
But that's not to say now you can take your 8 hours and eat all sorts of rubbish.
No, that's not going to work.
No,
absolutely not. No, we're applying the what we've discussed already with respect to the Mediterranean diet.
I have messages coming in about aging.
Yes.
Listening to your discussion on aging, my 90-year-old mother was shopping for her granddaughter's wedding. She rejected an outfit because it was too old for her. It's all in the attitude.
Right.
13-year-old says, this listener has a great refrain for getting old. It's not that you've turned 50 years of age. It's that you have reached level 50. And that's probably a good way to look at it too. What about exercise then?
Yeah, well, exercise is important. So what I can say that's new about exercise that listeners mightn't be aware of is the importance of two things. Resistance exercise, that's weight training. We don't do nearly enough of that. And we lose a lot of muscle mass year on year after the age of 45. So it's important to focus on that. And in order to assist with that muscle mass loss, protein supplementation. Now, the research on this is still evolving, but in my opinion, it's strong enough to recommend whey protein supplementation. And certainly we know that some amino acids like valine, leucine, isoleucine are particularly effective at helping with building muscle mass.
Okay. Are you getting those from protein shakes?
Whey protein. You know, you can buy a supplement in health food stores.
So you can just take
whey
it
protein,
as a pill.
Take it as a powder in water and a shake,
okay.
Yes.
What other supplements would you recommend?
So the definitely vitamin D. And there's no question about that in terms of immunity and cell aging. So certainly vitamin D, probably 1,000 international units a day. Really it's interesting with respect to supplements that the research on this hasn't actually shown that supplement use makes a huge difference. And it's probably better to get your vitamin C and other factors in supplements through foodstuffs, with the exception of some things like resveratrol. Now, resveratrol is what is probably the anti-aging chemical that we get in red wine. But the amount of resveratrol in red wine is not an awful lot compared with the animal studies which have shown a benefit on cell aging. So I would recommend resveratrol. It's not quite a supplement, but I think it's reasonable to take that in supplement form, mm-hmm. with vitamin D. Omega oils. There's a lot of good research with respect to omega oils.
But then again, if you're eating enough oily fish, are you getting that anyway?
You are getting it.
You should be getting it through your food.
Absolutely. But really, that's oily fish 3 times a week.
Okay.
And not an awful lot of people are
mm-hmm.
eating that.
Mm-hmm.
Oily fish 3 times a week or omega supplements also helps with sleep. So if your evening meal is oily fish, then that makes a difference to sleep patterns.
Yes. And what do you see in relation to sleep patterns and people who are older? Because sometimes you don't need as much sleep as you age, or it can be difficult to sleep through the night.
So certainly sleep, our ability to sleep reduces as we get older. It doesn't mean that you're not fatigued the next day because of that. So I've actually covered a number of different aspects which make a difference to sleep. But foods in particular, certain foods at nighttime, which are high in tyramine, can agitate our nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system particularly, and change patterns of sleep. Alcohol at night doesn't help with sleep. It disrupts the relationship between rapid eye movement sleep and non-rapid eye movement sleep. And having a good balance in those two is important. So we get to sleep quicker after alcohol, but then the sleep pattern during the night is disrupted. And we have to get a certain amount of non-rapid eye movement sleep to not experience fatigue the next day, because that's when all of the replenishment happens. People used to think our brain switched off at night when we fell asleep. Mm-hmm. But the brain is actually more active at night than most times during the day.
Processing.
It's processing. It's taking everything you've experienced that day and putting it into good memory spaces, etc. And it's also replenishing collagen. You know, the black lines we see around our eyes? There's two types of collagen. There's one which is our kind of scaffolding, our infrastructure, and we can't influence that particularly. And then there's a second type which is replenished over a 24-hour period, a much finer collagen. And that's the one we see just under the skin, etc. And that's a very important collagen. So that's also replenished at night. Mm-hmm. So it is actually important to get sufficient sleep.
Okay.
And food is one thing, and also not taking too vigorous exercise just before we go to sleep
Yes.
is another.
So think about the Sardinians. Maybe have your exercise in the day, at some point in the day, and have your little glass of wine in the afternoon.
Yes.
And then you might be ready for sleep at
Yes.
night. Just when it comes to the resistance training, we're not talking about heavy weights, are we? We're talking about, you know, starting off with the smaller ones. Maybe
starting off with smaller ones and then progressively increasing. I mean, I would love if this was taken seriously at a policy level and more accessible training programs were available. It's quite expensive to have a trainer and to have someone take you through a program of weights. And yet, that will help you because, you know, intuitively, we're quite lazy and would rather not push ourselves. So somebody supervising you does push you a little bit more. So it would be fantastic, I think, as an intervention if we could think about that mm-hmm. at a policy level,
yeah,
making
it
more accessible.
I often think some of those HIIT workouts that you see, they're too much. They're excessive,
yes.
aren't they,
yes.
for many
yes.
people. You also talk about the benefit of getting outside for exercise.
Yeah.
So daylight
yeah.
obviously is important then too.
Nature. Getting outside. Yes, daylight is important and that's all very relevant to vitamin D, fresh air, but nature makes such a difference. And if you think of the thousands and thousands of years we've spent evolving and we've been outdoors for most of it, that's what we're actually acclimatized to and accustomed to. So changes in temperature are good for us. Daylight is good for us and green is really good for us. There's a lot of good work showing that being amongst trees, in forests, actually enhances our ability to think, our memory, our learning processing, and reduces stress.
Mm-hmm. What about our ability to think and process Sudoku, crosswords, those sort of puzzles, are they good?
Yes, it is good to stimulate the brain. Now, the work is still, it's still at an immature stage or not a definitive stage because the areas of the brain you're stimulating with specific gain or activities are the areas that actually benefit, but it doesn't necessarily have a global brain benefit. Friendship actually and laughter are stronger than the impact of games.
Okay. And what about the benefits to people who read a lot, for example, or keep up to date with current affairs? Again, are you saying to me that friendships are more important?
No, I'm not saying they're more important. That's another adjunct that we should use. And that brings us full circle to purpose. Having a purpose in life is terribly important. And very often when people are working, they have purpose. Or when you're looking after young children as a mother, you have purpose. And as we get older, it's almost as though our purpose decreases, whereas it shouldn't. Purpose can be anything. Purpose can be getting up and saying, okay, today I'm doing the garden and I'm washing the dishes and I'm meeting my friends for a glass of wine this afternoon. That's giving your day purpose. That's where reading, etc. comes in. You know, that's part of purpose. It's part of variety. It's part of creativity. All of those aspects are really important. I just would add, Claire, yeah. that when reading, it's awfully important not to sit. So to stand every 45 minutes.
Oh, yes. Okay. So standing, and the standing desks that we see now for people who are of working age, you're nodding in approval at those as well, as I sit here looking at you.
That is how that has evolved, actually, because we know the impact of prolonged sitting is negative on cognitive function.
Well, the book is out now, and it's so interesting for people of any age. It's called Age Proof, The New Science of Living a Longer and Healthier Life by Professor Rose-Anne Kenny, published by Legom and available now. Thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thank you.
We'll take a break.
Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.